Hi, everyone.
Welcome to a new kind of episode for Shouldn't Have Come. This is Shouldn't Have Said That, which is going to be our kind of news roundup thing going forward. And it's also going to be Patreon exclusive. So we're going to be launching a Patreon. After I record this, figure out the way to do that. And yeah, if you'd like to hear these more off-the-cuff episodes where we talk about the news and discuss active criminal cases and celebrity gossip and things like that, and also more war things, you can sign up for the Patreon. We'll set it pretty low, probably something like $5 Australian a month, and you'll get access to all these exclusives. But we're putting this one out on the main feed, well, the first half of it, so we can, you know, introduce you all to what it is that we're going to be doing over there, and we'll love to have you over on the Patreon if you want to sign up. So,
I mean, you know, people are entitled to their sexual proclivities, you know. I mean, let there be 1,000 blossoms bloom. But I ain't spending any time, right?
Hi, Kieran.
Oh, hi, Yanni.
Now, these are in general going to be... I'm not going to be editing these in the same way. So don't, you know, don't expect wonderfully edited audio montages or even too many memes in there. The other reason we're doing this is because I've fallen a bit behind writing the next main episode, which is going to be about the Australian healthcare industry and chiropractic and alternative medicine and a few things like that. But for now, we've got a couple of news things to talk about. And the first thing I wanted to bring up with you today is, this is from Sunday by Daisy Dumas. New South Wales police say off-duty officers' shouts of Allahu Akbar boom after dispute with Muslim man were banter among friends.
Excuse me?
You heard about this?
No, I haven't heard about this.
Well, the chanting you heard was not directed at you in any way, Inspector tells Sydney man who complained about neighbor's Christmas party in Glenmore Park. Basically, a bunch of police officers are having a party. It's 13 December, Glenmore Park in Sydney, and water from the property swimming pool started leaking onto this neighbor's property, and this neighbor is Muslim. And then CCTV footage has captured the man shouting Allahu Akbar and Allahu Akbar boom. There's a bunch of New South Wales off-duty cops, and then they start chanting Allahu Akbar in unison, and then they go Hezbollah.
Fuck me.
He says, he asked the officers, I'm trying to ask you to take it easy, you're flooding my place. Instead, they decided to racially insult us because we're Muslims.
Yeah, that sounds like cops. I mean, I think what's surprising about it is that this is newsworthy. Don't they just do this?
That's the thing. It seems to be really normalized. And the police inspector who's dealt with it, this is what he said. What I can say from the outset, which is extremely positive, is that the chanting you heard was not directed at you in any way.
Yeah, it was actually directed at their one Muslim cop friend who was there, and he was doing like a mad keg stand. He said it was okay. He said you can say it.
Yeah. Well, the inspector says the yelling and chanting that you heard was banter between friends at a private Christmas party, and definitely not aimed at you.
Yeah, no, they weren't saying
Allahu Akbar boom.
Yeah, they weren't saying that. They were saying Ooh la la, Akbar. Boom, cuz Akbar, their very good friend.
The one Muslim guy.
Yeah. He just pulled actually what is known as the sickest dance move ever.
Oh,
he was
did
putting
the boom.
Ray Gun to shame. He was going nuts out there.
Well, this is actually how the ball started leaking, because he was doing cannonballs in.
Exactly.
And when he does it, they call it an Akbar boom, and they go, ooh la la, Akbar boom.
Exactly, you know? It's just a bit of banter, okay?
So, the guy says, while I can understand that you concluded something significantly different to that, I assure you that the evidence I have gathered, the inspector, does not support this conclusion, and I would hope this allays your concerns and fear of anything more sinister occurring on that day.
It's like, no, it doesn't. You've covered it up. I'm more concerned now.
he's obviously pretty pissed off about this, and the Guardian's seen, like, footage. Like, this...
Oh, shit.
Seems to, yeah, so this seems to be an outflow of a general neighborly dispute, which actually started with the previous owner of the other property, about the pool leaking into this house. But that seems to be kind of more administrative in general. And these are the new owners. This guy's going to complain, and they go, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, boom, Hezbollah. And then he's... They're telling him, don't worry, they're not Islamophobic.
Oh, this isn't at you. And it's like, what?
As you said, like, the surprise is that it's newsworthy, in a sense.
You know?
This is also how I acted as a 15-year-old. So I have a memory of going to AMF Bowling in Belconnen with a dear friend of mine, Labib. If you're listening, thank you for all your patience, because we definitely were, whenever we got strikes, going, Allahu Akbar.
Fuck.
As, like, 15-year-olds. So,
well, that's because it was that fucking god, what was it, Ahmed the Terrorist, was it?
Yeah,
there?
It was that era.
It was that era,
at least in the context of, like, we were all aware of that. I don't know when that was really going.
Yeah, but it feels like it was like post 9/11 enough that it was like, we can make jokes about this, but the jokes are still edgy because it's not that far away.
Exactly.
Whereas now you can just make a 9/11 joke and it's just like, it really doesn't fucking matter.
That's exactly
right. Who gives
a
shit?
You can just...
9/11, 9/11, 9/11.
Like, that's the thing. Now if I was bowling, I'd be like, woo, 9/11.
You know?
You know, like, you have to knock down two pins.
Somebody's just like, that's not the score.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So, we're going to compare this to... I don't know about compare. It's not a great segue. I wanted to talk about this caravan. You know about the caravan? What do you know about this caravan?
Right, the caravan with explosives in it?
Yes. What do you know about it so far?
And, okay, so... there was a caravan that they found with explosives, and it was... it had a list of targets in it, and it's anti-Semitic?
Yeah, that's basically what the, like... zeitgeist is. It's probably what everyone's kind of heard. So, I guess we should go into it a little bit. We've got more information about what actually happened so far. So,
yeah.
It's... The first thing is that the caravan was, materially speaking, kind of a hoax. So, there's no detonator, so the explosives can't explode. And it was got from, like, a mining site, really quickly put together, and then tipped to the police, intentionally.
How the fuck do they get explosives from a mining site? Like, do they not lock that shit up?
Well, you just need to know one miner with the key and give him, like, some money. Because there's a guy with a lot of money at the bottom of all of this.
Okay, well, I guess with, that,
like,
makes
a lot
more
of
sense.
Money. But the on the revelation that the attack wasn't really
like an actual, like, attack,
the Executive Council of Australian Juries co-CEO said it was really disappointing.
come on. I already got angry about it.
Yeah, he's like, oh, this wasn't anti-Semitic. Oh no, that's really disappointing.
It's like, fuck.
Shouldn't, I mean...
We've been grasping at straws.
Yeah, there's absolutely the, you know, look into how the Defamation League really defines anti-Semitic attacks. But to be, like, you know, and Alex Rivchin, that guy, like, he is a Zionist. And that means, like, his business, because, you know, if you're a Zionist, you want Israel to do well. If you want Israel to do well, you need people to come there. If you want people to come there, they need to be convinced that going to Israel is safer than where they live.
Yeah.
And so if people who are, you know, Jewish in Australia feel unsafe, they're more likely to go to Israel. So he has his business is...
It's a whole thing.
His business is anti-Semitism in a sense, because it's convincing people that they can't exist where they are. They have to return.
They have to go to Israel.
Implying that they're incompatible with the society that they're in.
Okay, so it's less of, like, not just, like, relying on the, like, you know, we have to return to the homeland kind of thing, but also being, like, on a logistical scale, like, you have to return because people are trying to kill you everywhere.
Exactly.
Else.
Like, he has an interest in that, but I do think he's, like, being played here.
Yeah.
So there's an ongoing thing about these, like, Judeophobic, anti-Semitic attacks in Sydney. Basically, over December, a bunch of, like, cars got swastikas spray painted on them and shit, like, real fuck shit.
Yeah.
And the key suspect is this, like, organized crime type. He's, like, a landlord. He owns a childcare center and a bunch of gyms. His name is Sayed Erhan Aka. And I think he's, like, Turkish.
Okay.
But I didn't search that much, but I think they're Turkish names. But yeah. They're Balkan. maybe Albanian. And so his first, he's the one alleged to be, like, paying for this.
Okay.
And basically paying, like, low-level street thugs to spray paint, like, fuck the Jews and swastikas. Like, real fuck shit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, it's gross shit that they're doing.
Yeah.
And the caravan explosives were planted by, like, Tammy Ferrugia and Scott Marshall. They're just, again, like, kind of low-level street thugs.
I was
thugs.
About to say, who the fuck are they?
Well, we have some posts from Tammy Ferrugia.
Tammy, what is up? What is going on?
Well, it reveals a little bit about what happened. So, the first post is, all caps. Anyone got a caravan for sale? Need one ASAP? I've got money.
Fuck.
$6 signs. She then, a couple days later, anyone got any plastic jerry cans? Please let me know. And then
stop, you can't be doing this.
A couple days after that, she's tweeting about how much she misses Scott since they took him to prison. And now she's in prison.
Well, that's, oh my god, that's, how old are these people?
Like 30s, 20s, 30s.
And that's the exact age I would have, like, well, actually, I would have said 30s, like, to early 40s.
Yeah.
And that's because,
I mean, maybe, like, yeah, like,
that's the age that you, I guess it feels like that's the age where you just, like, are always posting shit online. Then again, I don't know what the kids post online, you know?
No, I think Tammy's, like, older than us.
You know?
Absolutely. Like, these are
adults. It gives that vibe. It tastes of, like, you know, Tammy is loving a Diet Coke right now.
It is a little bit of that.
You know?
And they're just, like, you know, they just needed cash, like, and this guy was willing to pay. That's a big truck.
Yeah.
I hope the ambient noise of our street goes well. If this episode's unlistenable, we'll record somewhere else. But if this is nice, we'll keep doing it.
Hell yeah.
So, the other people that have been, like, caught for this kind of stuff, it's a multi-ethnic group of street thugs and street toughs and, like, low-level criminals and, you know, drug addicts and such who need
money. Yeah, just people who are like, yeah, I'll do whatever for
exactly.
Like, you know.
Like, in general, it's like, okay, these guys kind of don't know, there's not a coherent thing going on here.
Fair. This is not organized like that.
Yes, although the main guy, Syed Akka, like, so only right-wing support, only right-wing sources reported this, but he's, like, apparently known to just use a lot of, like, anti-Semitic slurs online and stuff. He's just one of those types.
Yeah.
But he's not in the country. So he's fled the country, and he's been doing this via, like, Bitcoin, probably.
That is actually even more insane. He's not even in the country right now?
No, he's not even in the country right now. So he's been, like, organizing this from overseas.
Then why has he got his fucking knickers in a twist?
The acting theory is that he is trying to get a more lenient sentence for something, or even amnesty for something, because he's fled the country because he's in trouble for some drug stuff. And he's trying to get a more lenient sentence, and so by being able to reveal, like, hey, there's a van with all this shit in it, like, he gets a lenient sentence. That's the working theory.
What? That would be a really funny big brand move, especially if it had worked.
Yeah, well, it seems, it's like a kind of classic organized crime thing.
You
so
know?
You have, like, caches of weapons around your city.
Yeah.
And then if you're going to prison, it's like, oh, I can reveal where we have all these weapons.
Fair.
And so
it's
if you
like,
give
oh,
me,
we've
you know,
got the weapons now.
Exactly.
It's like, cool, so you'll shave, like, however many years off my sentence. Or,
exactly. Exactly.
I get early good behavior release.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Exactly like that. So it's part of that. That's what the working theory is as far as we know, I suppose.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about a journalist who is kind of involved in a bit of this, was the one to reveal the plan, like the sheet of paper with the targets.
Yes.
Right? So her name is Shari Markson, and we're going to start with her dad, Max Markson.
Okay, Max.
So I don't really know what his job is, but he's like a celebrity agent. So he's the one who gets those big deals between, like, media companies and celebrities for those tell-all stories. Like, you know when you see, like, oh, this person's got this much money for this or that story.
Yeah. The current affair is paid.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
what's your
Bruce Lerman, like, $500,000 or some shit.
What's your favorite tell-all story?
What's my favorite tell-all story? It's obviously V. Stiviano.
V. Stiviano is a good one. I'm just going to send you a doc.
Yes.
And it's got a bunch of pictures on it, and I need you to basically look at a picture and tell me what you see. Tell the audience what you see. Okay. No, don't make a copy. I'm just trying to send it. Folks, I want you to know I'm really bad at using technology.
And that's not true. That's simply not true.
I'm really bad at using consumer technology.
That is much more true, yes.
Like messaging apps. Alright, so we open this one up.
Alright, opening.
And you'll see a bunch of, you know, you'll see people, and you can tell me what you see. And
alright, so what I'm seeing here is a man and a woman.
So that's Max Markson.
And I'm assuming his daughter?
No, so that's Natasha Ryan. So nice. At 14, she ran away from home to live with her 22-year-old boyfriend. And then a couple of years after her funeral, they found her hiding in a closet. So she's now with her 27-year-old boyfriend, because they're still together. Max got her signed up for the story before he even caught the plane over. She got her $120,000, and then another $200,000 from Women's Day when she married her now 32-year-old husband in 2008, the same guy.
So wait, how old is she during all of this? So obviously 14.
14 when she runs away, yeah. And they find her when she's 19.
Shit.
But she's just been living with this other guy. And yeah, Max, you know, organizes her to get the money for the story and for the wedding and stuff like that.
All right, all next right. I'm scrolling down and I'm seeing Max with Ida Buttrose.
Yep. So Max was her agent, got her heaps of money, and apparently at a Ida Buttrose event where she was launching a treadmill or something.
Of course she was.
Fucking Max got into a fight with Linda Evangelista.
What?
Yeah, because he apparently didn't communicate stuff well to her, so she came for the treadmill event wearing, like, exercise clothes, and then the Sydney Telegraph was like, Linda Evangelista looks like a slob.
No. Linda, no.
So she's furious. So if you'll scroll down.
All right. Wow, that is him with Charlie Sheen.
That is him with Charlie Sheen.
In front of, like, the Sydney Opera House, yeah. And the bridge and shit.
So when celebrities come to Australia, they'll often get in touch with Max to, like, handle their affairs while they're here, make sure they get the stories or whatever, the interviews.
Jeez.
And yeah, so the money and stuff.
That's feral.
Be wild if that wasn't the most notable Hollywood actor that he's pictured with.
I'm really scared to scroll to the next one. Let me see. Wow, that's that fucking guy, the one that beats up, like, Asian people.
Beat up an Asian guy. Mark Wahlberg,
there we
yes.
go, that's the one.
Yeah,
that's
so
the one.
Especially if those celebrities are slightly controversial.
Yeah, I was gonna say, this is,
Wouldn't it be crazy if Mark Wahlberg wasn't the most famous person whose name started with an M that's controversially known to have assaulted someone that Max knows?
I'm scrolling, Jen. Oh no, is that Mike Tyson?
That is Mike Tyson.
Fuck. And he's in this photo, he's pretending to strangle Max, and Max is doing a silly like. Ugh!
Is he pretending to strangle Max, or is he pretending to bite his ear?
Oh shit! I thought that was just him yelling while he was like, you know, strangling him. But I guess that's Jesus Christ.
Max doesn't only, however, represent celebrities. If you'll. Continue to the next photo. Do you recognize that man?
I do not know this man.
That is Bob Hawke, Australian
oh,
Prime Minister.
Oh, shit, yeah.
So, Bob Hawke cheated on his wife with his biographer and then left his wife for his biographer.
That's wild.
And Max was literally hanging out with Bob Hawke when that news broke that this had happened.
Holy shit.
And so he gets the story set up quickly with 60 Minutes and gets this exclusive where Bob Hawke gets to, like, soft launch his affair. Sounds familiar.
Holy
shit. Keep it in mind.
Okay.
Wouldn't it be weird if Max was also friends with another world leader famous for cheating on his wife?
Don't do this to me. I'm scrolling. Yeah, who would have thought? He's getting a hug from Bill Clinton.
Yeah, that's Bill Clinton. And it'd be weird if Bill Clinton wasn't the most beloved national leader that Max knew.
I'm scrolling. He's with Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, that's Nelson Mandela, and look who's touching his arm.
That's fucking bizarre.
Yeah.
What?
When famous people come to Australia, Max
just there.
Organizes the interviews and shit like that, and publicity appearance, and gets the money on the side.
Also, out of interest, the person next to Max in this photo looks an awful lot like one of the Packers.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think it is. So there
kind
is a
of, like,
relationship.
Blocky and shit.
There's a relationship between the Packers and Max.
Jesus, that's feral.
Yeah, so that's the last one. There's not. I couldn't. I didn't have anywhere to go from Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, that's insane. Because like, where else can you go about like the most influential people?
But there's plenty of others. Do you remember that Australian girl who got in trouble in Colombia for like bringing cocaine in or whatever? Cassie Sainsbury. So he's
representing. Why would you bring cocaine to Colombia?
No, maybe she was going. Is she stupid? Maybe she was going from. To Australia, but
I
yeah,
think
she,
it would be more no, funny Cassie if she was bringing it in, stupid. Like fucking idiot.
No, she absolutely like on the record that whole story. She sounded like an idiot the whole time, but Max is the one who sorted it out. He's worked with like other politicians, plenty of other celebrities, and in to kind of display what kind of person Max is. So he was once asked about who the finest Australian leaders were, and he said Don Mage. You know who Don Mage is?
No,
he runs Domino's. And then he said Frank Lowy, who runs Westfield.
Okay.
And then he said Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah, of course he did.
Who he once called Australia's greatest businessman and said Rupert Murdoch is an inspirational Australian.
Rupert Murdoch makes my peenie feel funny. And I like that a lot.
Oh, and he's British.
Rupert Murdoch makes my peenie feel funny. And I like that a lot.
He was a radio DJ at first. So... Max parlayed his fame to more and more fame, and eventually has a daughter, and she currently hosts a show on Sky News called Shari. So her name is Shari. What did I say his last name was? Markson.
Yeah.
Shari Markson. I kept calling him Max Martin, and I was trying like searching things about Max Martin, and that's the Swedish DJ.
Damn.
Who also produced everything. But so Shari's obviously inherited her father's access. So here's her story up till now. So she starts at the Sunday Telegraph at 16. By the time she's like 23, she's chief of staff there. So that's a Murdoch paper.
Oh my God, Chrissa Fooley, eat your heart out.
Yeah, no, she's like a Chrissa Fooley type. She wins Young Journalist of the Year from News Limited a couple of times though. So she's better than Chrissa Fooley.
Damn.
At 21, she sneaks into the hospital with flowers to get an interview with a victim of the London bombings.
Holy shit, that's feral.
She, like, pretends to be, like, a family member.
Holy shit, that's feral.
At 25, she broke the story of Tony Abbott missing a vote because he fell asleep because he was hungover. And then at 27, she leaves to join Seven Network on TV. And I think at the time, that's Fairfax, but it's... Which is Packer, I think, but now it's Murdoch or something. It's... No, now it's owned by some guy named Stokes, like the independently wealthy guy.
Damn.
And she breaks a bunch of the early scandals of the Barry O'Farrell New South Wales administration. I don't really remember the details, but
I don't know anything about that.
But I remember it being like a controversial administration.
Yeah.
So at 28, she leaves Seven Network to become the Australian editor of Clio.
Damn.
Which is a Packer production.
Yeah.
At 30, she becomes the media editor of The Australian, which is a Murdoch one.
Damn.
And she gets into trouble once because she breaches Israeli protocol to, like, try to give a soldier her email, like a wounded soldier. And the Israelis are like, don't do that because they're going to, like, we don't want people to know who's at this hospital.
She's like, okay, no, but that's totally fine. You'll email me anyway though, right?
And then in 2016, she gets appointed national political editor of the Daily Telegraph, which is Murdoch. So she's credited with breaking the story of Barnaby Joyce's love child.
Oh, shit.
That's her. Rumors had been flying about, but she's the one who, like, named the person, figured out that it's his assistant, whatever.
Holy shit, she's like, yeah, here's the actual take.
Exactly. And she tries to get them for, like, a sit-down interview, like her dad had done with Bob Hawke.
Yeah.
But, like, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, well... Who did he end up doing that sit-down interview with? Was that on A Current Affair?
60 Minutes.
60 Minutes.
I should have checked if her dad... Because he got paid for that. Max probably sorted that out.
Max might have sorted it out,
but,
you know?
Wait, let me search that right now.
Hey, gang, we're going to take a quick break to see if we can find this information.
All right.
No way of knowing.
Couldn't find it quickly, so... I don't know who got Barnaby the money, but yeah, she breaks that story, and she also broke the news of the Peter Dutton, like, attempted coup in 2018,
which didn't
work. So I have a feeling Dutton, like, is her source or something. So, but, I mean, they're all kind of her source, because she, so after she starts hosting Shari on Sky News, she travels with Scott Morrison through his election campaign.
Of course.
As, like, the resident journalist. She's gone a little bit off the deep end since signing with Sky, so now she's, like, a COVID is a Chinese bioweapon kind of person.
Of course she is.
And she's lauded Trump's bold vision to take over the Gaza Strip.
I can't even necessarily say she looks like a conservative, but she kind of looks like she's got some views.
Yeah, yeah. She's, I mean, she's like a passionate pro-Israel voice. And, like, it's, you know, relevant that her family's Jewish.
Yeah.
And the synagogue that was listed in the sheet of paper or whatever is, like, where she had her bat mitzvah and where her parents got married. So, like, she's got a personal stake, I suppose. But she's also, like, you know, she's really excited for Trump Casino and the Gaza Riviera.
Of course. That.
So, the broad timeline, and we'll, you know, we'll go into this. So, the broad timeline is that about the caravan. So, the AFP find the caravan on January 19.
Yeah.
On January 22, we learn about this guy who's, like, some mysterious overseas guy who's paying for all these other anti-Semitic attacks.
Yeah.
But we don't know about the caravan.
Yeah.
On January 29, the Daily Telegraph leaks that there's a potential anti-Semitic caravan or whatever.
Yeah.
Which they leaked from the police at some point.
Okay.
At this point, the police are pretty sure, because they're like, there's no detonator, this list is bizarre, what is this?
Yeah,
we
this
know who we got it from.
As hell.
And then Shari reveals that they're like, what, that there's a list with specific targets and who those targets are.
Yeah.
And gets a bunch of buzz because people at those targets think it's a news cycle, right?
Yeah, they're just like, holy shit.
So that's on January 30, the same day the coalition received a briefing about it.
Interesting.
So whoever it is.
Yeah, surely it's got to be someone in politics who's getting, like, all
the
shit.
She's got a source. I mean, her dad's friends with everyone.
Yeah.
There's, like, her dad and Tony Abbott have some sort of connection. But I think they're smart enough to not, like, represent. He doesn't seem to represent figures that she does investigations on, which I just think that would just be too obvious more than anything else.
I think so. I mean, like, I imagine they're still very, very friendly with each other. But it's like, oh, well, can't have it on paper, you know,
exactly.
But we can still chat.
Exactly. So we know now that the caravan was a hoax. But it has, I mean, not a hoax. I guess not quote unquote, not a real anti-Semitic attack.
Yes.
As it were, it was dressed up to look like one.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate that, like, the difference is really thin there.
Yeah.
In terms of the material impact. But I think it's telling that that guy, Nivni or whatever, fuck, I should learn this guy's name. But that guy is, like, you know, disappointed about how it'll happen, because this does seem to have, like, increased the amount of fear the most.
Well, yeah, because it's more than just, like, you know, the petty vandalism we've been seeing.
Yeah.
Where, you know, both, like, the Jewish community and, like, the Muslim community are just getting increasing amounts of, like, just, like, shit spray painted.
Shit spray
and, like,
painted.
Things thrown at, like, religious buildings.
Yeah.
And, like, stuff like that, where it's just like, hey, this is kind of, like, it's reasonably low level, but the problem is it does feel like it's leading to something bigger. You
it
know,
does
the
feel
more
like
this
it's
happens,
leading to something
the more
bigger,
likely
yeah.
there is that someone's going to be like, okay, well, what's the next step?
Exactly.
And, you know, a van full of explosives, that kind of does seem logical to me. You know?
Yeah, it's, I mean,
being like, okay, well, the next thing is an attack.
Yeah,
and
an
the method
attack.
Of attack, you know, we've seen the Christchurch, like,
yes.
You know.
Not too long ago, the crisis.
Not too long ago. And that came out of nowhere. Like, that.
I don't think there was, like, a strike force just arresting random Islamophobic people, which is just most Australians. Like, that's the thing. Like, these
yeah.
cops kind of show. Like, most Australians view Islam and Arabs as a joke.
Yeah.
Or a curiosity at best.
You know? Like,
and,
oh, yeah, gotta be nice to them, you know?
Yeah. And
it's not PC.
Exactly, that's the one. It's like, it's not PC, but I don't like how they,
Racism.
Exactly. So, there's a bit of talk about, like, Albanese calling this terrorism and whether it is terrorism or not. And what do you think the average Australian thinks of when they hear terrorism?
Brown people.
Right? Like, that's the... Sorry, everyone. That's the thing. Like, from a strict definition of how terrorism works, sure, it's designed to increase the terror in a community.
Yeah.
But Anthony Albanese knows that the culture that we have here, when you say terrorism, an average Australian is going to think about Islam.
Yeah.
Or prey on people, or Muslims, or whatever they say.
Yeah.
And that's, like, he should know better, I guess.
He should, but I think the problem is he doesn't give a shit.
No, that's true. Like, he doesn't give a shit.
I think, you know,
I always forget that he doesn't give a shit.
Exactly, you know, never forget Anthony Albanese does not give a fuck about you, me, or anybody else.
Because he's good at acting like he does.
Yeah, and I think maybe, you know, given the Anthony Albanese episode, please check it out if you haven't already. It's 3 episodes, actually. But given that, you know, in his youth, he did seem like he had a lot more, I guess, bright-eyed ideals.
Yeah, he had some ideals.
You know, and it seems like throughout the duration of his life, he's slowly had to kill all of that.
Yeah.
To become, you know, quite happily, it seems. A guy who kind of doesn't really stand for anything.
No.
Like,
other than, like, long-term infrastructure, primarily for the benefit of the
business. A very controversial issue, I'm sure.
Oh, my God.
You know, and that's the thing, right? Like, being completely spineless has worked really well for him.
It has.
Like,
it has.
You know?
Which is weird, because he was known to be such, like, a firebrand and, like, a bit of a head kicker, but...
That's the thing. All of them were. And I think all of them were to get to the point that they're at now.
And then you get paid
and then,
to calm down a bit.
Yeah. And then it's just like, hey, and all the people who got you to that point because they thought maybe there was a chance of difference,
yeah.
You know, all the people who were like, yeah, you know what, I think you're the one who's got the best chance to kind of, like, get our message across, you know... do things for the people. It doesn't fucking matter as soon as, yeah, the money's involved.
Exactly.
And so you can just say whatever the fuck you like as long as it's kind of, like, inoffensive to the majority of people.
That's right. And
then it's totally fine.
And
doesn't fucking matter.
It doesn't fucking matter. The majority of people don't care. Like, we're...
No.
You know, I think probably a bit deluded as to how much people even know about anything happening.
You know, but, like... Yeah, I think he knows full well that he's using loaded language, and I think he just doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, and...
Why would he?
On the topic of doesn't give a fuck, something he apparently gives a fuck about, and this will be a nice little transition to our next topic we're going to cover, which is this peacekeeping call. So the peacekeeping call went well. Exactly what's going to happen hasn't been...
Is this for Ukraine?
Yes.
Okay.
There was a peacekeeping call with the leaders of France and Germany, Italy, Canada... 25-ish other countries, and Sir Keir Starmer, who is the Prime Minister
Of the UK.
So he's the one setting it up. So,
Albo
has come out and said that it's in Australia's interests to back Ukraine. And, like, I don't know who I'm saying this to, really, but it's never in Australia's interest to send any soldiers anywhere. Ever.
You know what is in our interest? Not getting involved.
Not getting fucking involved.
That's not our business.
That's all the way over there.
Absolutely. And again, like, from a humanitarian perspective, I'm like, yeah, that's really tragic what is happening. I think that, you know, Ukraine is obviously suffering, and that's really shitty. But a lot of places suffer, and it's really shitty, and we don't send people there,
no.
So...
We ain't sending no one to Sudan.
Yeah.
You know, and there's just, like, humanitarian crises around the world that are less... warish.
Yeah.
Like, there needs to be as few people willing to hold a gun as possible in that area.
Yeah.
And then the war will stop.
And
we're not gonna, you know, we don't really cover European politics here, because I don't give a fuck.
Neither.
So, in terms of, like, I don't think anything of Volodymyr Zelensky. Like, I just, like, I don't know, I don't think any, you know? I'm not saying this from a perspective of, like, this isn't a if there is a good cause, this isn't a good cause, or shit like that. Just, like,
yeah.
It's... I mean, for one thing, also, when we send our boys overseas, like, who are we gonna send? Some guy named Robert Ben Smith?
Oof.
I think...
You know?
Oh, I think Max also got his media deal. Ben Robert Smith's.
Yeah, fucking wouldn't surprise me.
Like, I don't think, in terms of what reason is being given, like, there's no salient political truth if you compare, like... this gung-ho-ness, I suppose, to get involved in Ukraine versus, like, we gonna send anyone to Palestine?
You know?
Where they're being, like, bombed the shit out of.
You know what? Let's all have a quick moment and think about what's the difference between Ukraine and Palestine. Have you got any ideas?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, he...
Not quite. That's right. They look different.
Yeah, it's racist. It's like the guy from before, the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, which, like, I feel dirty saying Jewry.
Well, it just sounds like you're not saying jewelry correctly.
It sounds like you're not saying jewelry correctly, and it sounds like a slur.
It does kind of sound like a slur.
Like, wouldn't, like, isn't Judah, but I think it's a specific term, but he's Ukrainian, not for nothing. Like, he, you know, the things that he's advocating for to get involved into is one thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, Penny Wong says, Australia won't be intimidated by Russia. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, we never got that chance to shirt front Putin the way that Tony wanted to way back when. And Big Tone was like, yeah, I want to fight this man. You know, I think what we really need to think about right now is how devastated Tony Abbott must be that he's not currently in office when everybody actually wants to fight Vladimir Putin.
He's
got to be so fucked off right now.
Plus, he could say...
He's eating onions and weeping.
Like, Peter Dutton, I don't think his heart's in it when it comes to his, like, Israel stuff. You know, like, I don't... think it's not that he believes, it's like I don't think he cares that much. Tony Abbott really hates Muslims.
Yeah.
You know, like Peter Dutton is mainly a property owner. Tony Abbott is like an ideologue.
Yes.
I mean, I guess Peter Dutton's an ideologue for private property. But
you know,
Tony Abbott's an ideologue for Western chauvinism.
You know.
And he'd be eating. He'd be like his Hamas comments would be crazy if he was in charge. I think he would have successfully whipped people into a frenzy, but on the topic of staying out of it, I was listening to an interesting podcast recently about the Coalition of the Willing Iraq war situation when Bush is trying to go to Iraq, right?
Oh, yep.
And the Iranian leader at the time is like, you know, we are going to, you know, stay out of this. Like, if we can offer support. I think they offered, like, you can use the airstrip, blah, blah, blah. Like, they were happy to, like, help in some degree.
Yeah, like,
we're not
going
to send anyone in.
Yeah.
And, like, Bush is like, you're either with us or the terrorists. And he's like, I'm not with you and I'm not with the terrorists. I'm with the Iranian people. Those are my focus. And they don't want to go into Iraq. And that's what got Iran added to, like, the axis of evil and started a lot of this. I mean, not started, but, like, the modern idea of Iran being opposed to the U.S. is like, well, we didn't want to go into Iraq, and so they're going to be punished forever for that. And it's like, well, they shouldn't have wanted to go into Iraq. It was a lie.
Yeah.
It was a lie the whole time, and they were still being polite about it and allowing things or whatever.
Yeah, they're just like, hey, sorry, that's not for us, but you're welcome to, like, you know... transit through the country, that's fine, no issues there, we're just gonna mind our own business.
Yeah.
And the US is like, I'll fucking kill you.
Yeah.
Like, you fucking terrorist.
I guess the interesting thing about this is Albo Australia is aligning away from the United States here, sort of. It's hard to know what's happening there.
I mean,
but
yeah, look, this isn't a US politics podcast. I think that the politics over there is ridiculous and I don't care for it.
Oh, it's so much fun though.
God knows what's going on over there at the moment.
Yeah.
I don't know. And so it's like, hey, are we with them or against them? Well, it depends on which thing.
Yeah. Because, like, this is with, like, I don't know if this is Albanese maybe aligning himself with the US non-MAGA political class, which still I have to assume hold a lot of, like, aristocratic style infrastructural power.
And also perhaps he's thinking of, like, you know, he is a numbers man. But he's probably also thinking of the long game as well. Like, looking at how things went the first round of, like, a Trump presidency where there were a lot of people disillusioned afterwards, maybe we'll see the same thing again this time around.
They're firing so many people.
I mean, and this is all big caveat here, if it does indeed end.
If it even gets to the end of 4 years.
You know?
Like not for nothing.
Who fucking knows what's going to
happen? He could fucking die.
He could just straight up die.
He doesn't look well.
No.
He's forgetting things.
Exactly. I don't want to talk about it, but have you seen, like, the bruise on his hand or whatever that they keep putting makeup over?
No.
And they were like, oh, it's because he shook someone's hand and it was a really tough handshake, so we got a bruise. And then people online are like, it looks like he had, like, a cannula, like, put in for medical stuff. And I'm like, this... Anyway, he's got a big-ass fucking bruise on his hand.
Oh, my God. And he got it from a handshake.
Allegedly.
Yeah. No, you know, like, the thing about the Trump administration is that you can trust them as much as you can trust any random police officer or Brisbane Lord Mayor Adrian Schrinner,
cool.
who is the topic of our third story and the last one that you're going to get on the main feed. So the rest of this is going to be on there. Patreon, but this one comes to us from Kenji Sato at the ABC. Kenji has a cute haircut. I like his haircut.
Oh, hell yeah. Get it, Kenji.
And Moreton Bay, so that's near Brisbane, recently made homeless camping a crime on public land. And
fuck. So yeah.
People are moving from there to Brisbane.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, if you're camping at Moreton Bay and you have to leave, it's a reasonable thing to do. It's like the nearest bigger place.
Yeah.
But I knew we couldn't let this one go when I saw this quote. Lord Mayor Adrian Schrinner said most campers were homeless by choice, having refused offers of accommodation during ex-tropical cyclone Alfred.
Now that's an interesting thing to say.
I hate that homeless by choice shit.
Because what do you mean? Were those homes you were going to put them in permanent? And by homes do you mean... just, like, whatever fucking, like, community center you can fit out with as many, like, cots and mattresses as you can.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is often more dangerous.
Let's put everybody with nothing to lose in a big situation with all their shit and, like, a stressful situation. People are probably going to be dealing with a whole range of issues.
And we're not going to give them doors that lock.
We're not going to give them doors that lock. If they want to clean themselves, they have to get naked amongst strangers.
Shit like that, you know?
You know, if they want to, like... It just...
You'll take your chance with the cyclone.
You'll take your chances with the cyclone, and especially, like, So I don't have any experience in, you know, homelessness or sleeping rough, but I imagine by doing so, you probably have a pretty good lay of the land on the places you can stay and where safe for you and the kind of things you need to, you know, survive a night. Like, you know, I imagine there's, like, you know...
You have to learn.
Working out... how to manage the elements. There's also working out, like, ways to exit a situation if you need to, be that, like, physical bolt holes or whatever.
Yeah,
like, I'm
yeah.
sure there's a lot involved in keeping yourself, like, alive out there.
Yeah,
you know? And probably a lot of people are like, yeah, fuck it, you know?
Absolutely.
What am I going to do?
24/7 stressful thing. And so Adrian has said, and this makes me scared, Brisbane can no longer take a compassionate and flexible approach to dealing with homelessness.
And that's crazy, because I didn't realize we were doing that in the first place.
Very funny that you say that. Yes, I didn't either. I hadn't even thought about that implication that we were doing that. So,
you know, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here. I don't see any compassion in how homeless people are treated here.
Not a single, like, other than by, you know, this or that social worker.
Yeah.
But, like, in terms of a structural. And, like, just...
No.
The whole... Like, I want to go into his specific statement. So, they're homeless by choice. They refused offers of accommodation. First off, Micah Projects, who actually, like, work with homeless people...
Yeah.
They just dispute that factually. They're like, a lot of people were not offered accommodation. Like,
well,
that's not a real thing. And then you got to think, well, what do they mean by accommodation?
Yeah.
So, do they mean, like, hostels, like we're talking about? Do they mean... like a short-term 2-week rental where it's like you might just be in more trouble at the end of this.
Yeah.
What do they mean by, like, offers that were refused? Like, did someone approach them in the sleep while they were on the street, while they were half asleep?
Yeah.
Or
just being like, hey, I've got a place you can go for the storm. And somebody who's living on the street's probably like, that doesn't sound like a safe thing for a stranger to tell
exactly.
me.
Exactly.
I'm not gonna fall for that. You're gonna do some shit.
You're gonna like, take...
I'm good, actually, man.
Take shit from me.
And that's like, see, they just want to be homeless. And this person's like, you know what? Probably a lot of people have had that situation where they, you know, have learned the hard way.
Not to trust people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, hey, I actually can't do that because last time I got fucked over real bad.
I mean,
and I'm not doing,
like,
that shit again.
Often dealing with the government, you get fucked over real bad. You get put somewhere that's, like, worse for you.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm sure they sent people letters and emailed them and shit like that. And they're like, we tried to reach them. I was like, they're fucking homeless. They can't check their emails.
Yeah, you know.
And how long is the, like, they probably had a huge form to fill out and shit. And again, like, the homeless by choice, like, do we get the context of these people's lives or no? We don't.
No.
What are the choices? Why are they making those choices?
You know?
We don't get that context. We just get they're homeless by choice. My cousin in India, one of my cousins in India, says this shit all the time when I'm in India. We'll see, you know, beggars and stuff, and I'll be like, oh, this makes me sad. And he's like, they all have houses. They just come here because they want more money.
I was like, what are you talking about?
Bizarre. And yeah, Adrian wants an easy way out before the Olympics, doesn't want this to be Brisbane's problem. If he makes camping illegal, so that's what he's talking about, making camping illegal. Like, people aren't going to have many places to go.
No, I mean, what's the alternative? It's going to be trying to, like, what, shift to another area where camping is legal?
That's the
or
big
what one. You're going to get is, you know, perhaps the solution to a problem that I think we all have with housing, and that's just, like, a shitload of squatters.
You'll get more squatting. Although, like, I wonder if most places you can squat are being squatted already, you know?
You know?
Like, probably there's places that are just empty. Well, yeah, what you'll get, really, is just a rise in the kinds of things that happen when there's people without houses. Like, a lot of them might go to, like, Ipswich or something like that.
Yeah.
That could be an easy enough one, and then that's Ipswich's problem. And then squatting,
just,
as you said.
You know, keep kicking the can down the road over and over and over again.
Eventually, if they're all in one place, like, something bad could happen. You get a new kind of slum, whatever, like,
you know,
whatever outcome of this that isn't reasonable offers of safe and fair accommodation and, like, hey, we're not going to turn the power off for a few months. Like, don't worry about that for a couple months, you know. Hey, it's not your responsibility to set up your internet connection or whatever. It's like, yeah, because, like, we're talking about people with, like, complex mental health issues, substance abuse issues, behavior issues, whatever it be, that have been harmless. It's gross, and you can't trust the government, and you also can't trust the cops. And that's going to be what we're going to talk about on the Patreon, so thanks for joining us on this free part of the episode. If you want to hear us talk about the Toy Accordingly case, which is an active trial, you'll have to sign up to our Patreon. Patreon.com/shouldn't have come, probably, but I'll put a link in the description.
Yay.
I haven't set it up yet.